weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Afric and to Andrew for driving us into the weekend with some afternoon entertainment. It is Friday, May 3rd. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan will be previewing a big night of League of Ireland action and a big weekend in the English Premier League. In Gaelic games, Brendan Devaney looks forward to the Munster and Connacht football finals, while Shane McGrath casts his eye over the weekend's crucial hurling clashes. Don McLean joins us live from Punchestown. And with the World Relay Championships upon us, we'll be speaking to Katie Kirk and Cole Dennehy as we edge closer to the Paris Olympics. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company. RTE Sports, Katie Kirk is alongside me. Alan Colley is alongside me. Watching the racing. The Punchestown racing is ongoing. We'll be crossing live to Don McLean very shortly. But Alan, we are looking forward to a big night of soccer, a big weekend of soccer as well. But the snooker championships are ongoing as well, which I know you take a keen interest in. Gilbert Wilson at the interval, 8 frames apiece. And Jack Jones is currently leading Bingham 8-7. Have you enjoyed the snooker thus far?
Yeah, absolutely, Shane. It's been brilliant. Good evening, first of all. Sorry, I am looking forward to a big weekend. Yeah. I'm heading to Dalymount after this as well. So the only show in town, Shane, the
for
League
some,
of Ireland this weekend.
For some.
I know you'll be heading elsewhere, but I have loved the snooker so far. And we are down to the business end. Of course, the big news was Trump and Ronnie going out at the same day.
What did you make of Ronnie?
I'm not
just,
Ronnie.
Just diving straight in. I'm going to throw that grenade
fan.
At you.
I'm not Ronnie's biggest fan. I've never been. Best player ever. Absolute genius. No one to touch him. Obviously, Hendry and Davis before him were amazing, but there's no one to touch Ronnie. He's the best I've ever seen and the best I think we'll ever see. Mm. But just some of his behaviour around tournaments and certainly during the defeat there during the week against Bingham, I thought the way he disrespected the referee was totally out of order. And it's not the first time we've seen it for him, and it's not just about disrespecting individuals, he disrespects the game as well. And it's a game that has given him so much, Shane, over the years. And I just don't like the way he behaves, as I say, in and around tournaments towards referees, almost intimidating them, the nonsense that he came out with, whatever about the behaviour actually during the incident. But the interview he followed up with Rachel Casey on Eurosport was dreadful in terms of the stuff that he said. And Tatiana Wollaston, who's married to a snooker player herself, is a fantastic referee, so she is. And I watched the incident and I was watching it live. She made her decision and he should have followed that, but to try and undermine her and disrespect her. And I was so glad that Stuart Bingham didn't get involved and showed the class that he has and stayed in his chair. Left Ronnie to dig a hole for himself, if you like, and Bingham went on to beat him as well, and I think that probably rattled Ronnie a little bit also as well, just in terms of his performance, because Stuart Bingham was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. He's gone on to the semi-final. As you say, it's nip and tuck now between Jack Jones and himself, who's probably been the surprise package of the tournament. He's been absolutely fantastic. And on the other half of the draw, Dave Gilbert, who I'd love to see go on and win it now, Shane. When we were over there a few years back, we met up with Gilbert, and really nice lad. He's had his struggles off the pitch. He actually, there's a brilliant story behind even him competing this year. He wasn't going to go to the qualifiers because he just thought his game wasn't good enough shape and mentally he wasn't right. And it was his friend who's been a long term friend, talked him into basically going to the qualifiers, and here we are now, obviously the final weekend, and he has a brilliant chance of getting to the final. And he is previous as well in the Crucible. He got to the semi-final a couple of years back, I think it was 3 years back, against John Higgins, and got beaten just by a frame. So he's not overawed by getting to this stage of the competition, and I'd love to see him go on and win a chin.
Oh, that is a great story. Always throwing in the names, so he is, Katie. You know, Gilbert, I was over there, I was chatting to him.
You know, Ronnie, that's not much of a name. Normally, I could throw in Ronnie as well.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't like him when I met him either. Just being honest.
We are very much looking forward to a big weekend of football, but it's a big weekend for athletics as well, Katie. The World Relay Championships are upon us.
Yeah, absolutely. World Relays this weekend in the Bahamas, so a fantastic trip for the Athletics Ireland squad. We've got 11 athletes out there. They're going to be competing tomorrow and Sunday across the mixed 4x400 and the women's 4x400. Only the top 14 in each event is going to qualify for the Olympics. And we're going to discuss later if that's a realistic prospect for this team.
Well, hopefully it is. Hopefully it is. You didn't get the trip to the Bahamas, Katie.
Unfortunately not. No. That would have been a nice one.
It would have been. We were off the Dalymount. That's the Bahamas of Dublin.
You're much happier here, Katie, aren't you? Be honest.
racing is ongoing at Punchestown. We're going to cross live to Don McLean in a few minutes. But first, rugby team news. We did preview Leinster Northampton in detail on yesterday's show with Bernard Jackman. So you can catch that on the podcast. But the Leinster Northampton teams for tomorrow's Championship Cup semi-final, I should say, at Croke Park, have been named for Leinster. There are two changes to the team that started in the quarter-final win over La Rochelle, with Ross Maloney and Josh Van der Fleer coming into the pack. Jason Jenkins is among the substitutes this time, and Will Connors is not in the match day squad, with Leinster opting for a 5-3 split on the bench. Jimmy O'Brien comes in as the extra back replacement, with the Ireland international recovering from a neck injury which has kept him out since December. But still no Hugo Keenan or Gary Ringross for Leinster. And Northampton, well, they're not without their issues as well. Neither Louis Ludlum nor Ollie Slidholm in their match day panel. Let's hear from Courtney Laws, who was speaking earlier today.
It's fantastic. Like, the stadium is incredible. Huge pitch. So it'll be a slightly different being probably so far away from the crowd. But again, we're just really looking forward to the game, to be honest. It'll be a great test for us. We're a team that wants to push ourselves and want to be the team we know we can be, and there's no better challenge than facing one of the best club sides in the world. You know, we know everyone sees us as the underdogs, but we don't see ourselves that way. We back ourselves, we back our talent. We know they've got a lot of good talent as well. We've got a lot of internationals in our team, we've got a lot of experience now, and we know we're going to have to put our game on the pitch, play rugby the way we want to play it, to go out there and win. We're not turning up tomorrow to try and disrupt them or take them off the game plan. We're coming to put our game on the pitch and test them as much as they're going to want to test us. It's really cool for me to be able to experience something like this with obviously the amount of people that come in to watch and the amount of expectation and interest around the game with my club team that I've been with for so long. It's a really exciting occasion for me, and I'm really, really looking forward to getting out there.
Should be a cracker tomorrow in Croke Park as Leinster and Northampton face off in the Champions Cup semi-final. We're taking a short break, then we're going to cross to Don McLean at Punchestown, because Stateman, with Paul Townend on board, has just won the champion hurdle. We will get reaction to that very shortly. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM. Game On.
Racing.
Now, as promised, Don McLean is on the line, and as I mentioned just before we took a break, Don, the champion hurdle has gone the way of Stateman for Willie Mullins, with Paul Townend on board.
Yeah, it was a really good race, Shane. As you know, Stateman was sent off a fairly long odds on shot. He was a 2-7 shot Irish point. He finished second behind him at Cheltenham in the champion hurdle there. He was sent off a 7-2 shot, and Jack Kennedy on Irish point. He put it up to him, he led from early, and he set what was a good test, a good pace. And Stateman just kind of had to do everything right. He jumped really well, but that's Stateman. He's so reliable. He's such a high-class horse who probably still doesn't get the recognition that he should get. But he came up on the outside of Irish Point into the home straight, just travelling a wee bit better than Irish Point. And he moved on in front of him. He jumped the last well. He kind of moved over across in front of him on the run-in, and Irish Point took a little bit of a false step. But Stateman was far enough clear, and he just kept on and went on and won well. It's I think now that's 12 wins out of 15 races for Stateman. That's how reliable he is. He won the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. It's the second win now in the Punchestown champion hurdle, and he's just such an admirable, likeable, reliable, high-class horse, Stateman. And yeah, big performance by him to beat Irish Point. But Irish Point, he ran well as well as in second place.
Some serious stats there. I mentioned Paul Townend on board because yesterday, Don, we were discussing the Jockeys Championship. I know Townend is on the favourite at 25-7 as well. So what is the situation with the Jockey Championship now?
Yeah, it's looking like it. Paul Townend is going to have to pull out all the stops to reel Jack Kennedy back in. He's got Ballyburn now in the next, and he's a long odds on shot, so there's every chance he'll win. And then he's got another way in the novices hurdle later on, who's kind of an even money 5-4 shot, so there's every chance that he'll win as well. But he'll need them in order to close the gap, because just obviously 1.5 days left, there's those two races left to go today, and then tomorrow Paul Townend, he doesn't have as strong a book of rides as he had, let's say, yesterday, so he's going to have to really hit every marker on the way in from here.
So you'd be
is it now, Don? Is it 4 or 5 now?
That's 5. That's 5 in it now. Okay. Yeah, they started with 6, so 5 in it now. So he's gonna, if he wins on Ballyburn, if he wins on another way, and that's three going into tomorrow. And he's got Lossima tomorrow. Obviously, she's a long odds on shot. He's got Cargese in the 4-year-old hurdle, and she's probably just about favourite in front of Butler's Secret. And then he's got a few other chances in handicaps. So Jack Kennedy, he'll be probably sleeping restlessly tonight because it's going to go all the way down to the wire, which is brilliant.
But would you still expect Jack to win it?
I'd say it's looking more likely that Jack will win it now. Okay. Yeah, it's more likely than not. Yeah, yeah. And look, Jack Kennedy, he's never won it. Paul Tennant is, I think, he's 6-time champion. Jack Kennedy, he's had such bad luck all the way through his the last couple of years with injuries. So he got a run at it this year. He's put it up to Paul Tennant, and he's driven him all the way down to the line, and he might just get there as well.
As you mentioned, Don, there is another Grade 1 at 25-7. We will keep you updated on the result of that one. What should we be looking forward to tomorrow? You mentioned a couple of big names there already, Don.
Yeah, the Mayor's Champion Hurdle, it's a Grade 1. There are two Grade 1 races tomorrow, and the Mayor's Champion Hurdle, Lossima, she's a long odds on shot for it, and she deserves to be, Shane, really. She's the outstanding mare. She was really good at Cheltenham. She's had a fairly light campaign as well. She's only a 5-year-old, and Willie Mullins did say at the start of the season that he was going to kind of leave her off for the early part of the season and let her ease her way in so that she'll kind of have the latter part of the season as her strong part of the season and going forward, and that's the way it's panning out. So she's an odds-on shot. So she faces challenge from Henry de Bromhead's mare, Tell Me Something Girl, with Rachel Blackmore on board, and she finished second behind Lossima at Cheltenham. So she's probably the one who's there to give her most to do. Asher O'Donnell was disappointing last time, but she's better than that. She's another Willie Mullins trained mare, and she's in the mix there as well. And then the 4-year-old's hurdle, that could be a really good race because Cargese, she sets the standard. She won the hurdle at the Leopardstown Dublin Racing Festival in February, and then she went out of Cheltenham. She finished second behind Madgeborough in the Triumph Hurdle there when she travelled down the hill like a likely winner and just got outstayed maybe by Madgeborough up the hill. And then she went to Aintree. She finished second to Sergino of Nicky Henderson's in the Grade 1 Juvenile Hurdle there. So she sets the standard. But Gavin Cromwell is having a really tremendous week. He's got a really interesting horse in there in Butler's Secret. He was only raced 3 times on the flat for Kieran Murphy. He's run twice now over hurdles. He won his first run, a Grade 3 race for Gavin Cromwell, and then he won impressively last time at Ferry House. He jumped really well that day, and he came away from his rivals. He's probably going to have to step up again if he's going to get the better of Cargese. He has to give her the £7 mare's allowance as well. But he's a progressive horse, and yeah, I think he might just be able to put it up to Cargese.
Okay, great. So lots to look forward to. Don McLean, for now, thank you so much for taking the call live from Punchestown. We will keep you updated with that race at 25-7. Alan Colley is still with us to chat soccer later. Katie Kirk is standing by alongside Carl Dennehy to chat athletics. So stick with us here. We're going to take another short break.
RTE 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat athletics, because Ireland will be looking towards Paris as a team of 11 heads to the World Relays in the Bahamas this weekend to secure qualification in the women's 4x400m and mixed 4x400m in athletics. Will be a busy weekend with 3 rounds to contend with and athletes shifting across events to get one of the elusive top 14 places to the Paris Olympics. Ireland have had an upward trajectory in the 400m relay event since Tokyo, making their mixed 4x400m final in 2021. In the last edition of this event in 21, the team of Tom Barr, Charlene Maudsley, Phil Healy and Chris O'Donnell secured qualification with delight, but this time supported by world finalist and multiple national record holder Rashida Adeleke. It looks like Ireland will be challenging for optimal lane draws in Paris on the final day of competition rather than just being happy to be there. So we are in a good place, Katie Kirk. It is a positive, optimistic time for the Irish team and the relay team.
Yeah, definitely. I've been having a little look at the entry lists, and it's clear seeing from those entries that there's a lot on the line here for all of our different nations. Some like 900 athletes entered across the weekend in different events, and some massive names that are showing out when previously this was maybe not such an important event on the athletics calendar. But obviously the Olympics is a big aim for this year, and Ireland are not holding back either. They have an 11 strong squad, including of course our fourth place finisher from last year in the World Championships, Rashida Adeleke, and they're going to go after that Olympic qualification.
Okay, so what are realistic ambitions here for the Irish teams this weekend in particular?
Well, of course they want to qualify, but as you said in the introduction there, you know, they don't want to just be happy to be there. Mm. They want to make sure that they're getting one of those elusive Olympic spots. We, of course, have the introduction of the repechage rounds this time in the World Relays, which could make the task a little bit tougher. We're maybe going to have extra rounds to run, and there's going to be slightly more shifting of the team. So a lot on the line and lots of hurdles to overcome during the weekend.
This is a new addition, so the repechage. Usually I'd associate that with rowing and sports like that, but we in athletics, this is going to place a lot of extra demands on the athletes, I would imagine.
Yeah, so of course, they only announced that this was going to be included last year, and it was met with different opinions. It will offer, in the Olympics itself, the opportunity for athletes that are being normally put out in the first round, an opportunity for a second run and a do-over. But for athletes, and particularly thinking about the Athletics Ireland relays, for example, in, you know, the last World Championships, they did qualify in those non-automatic spots.
Okay.
Those are not going to exist anymore, and our athletes will have to run an additional round.
Okay. Cathal Dennehy is also on the line. Cathal, are you a fan of the addition of the introduction of the repechage?
Absolutely not. I think it's very much stupid. I've long thought this, and I will think it during and after the Paris Olympics, that it's basically just an opportunity for the same athletes to get beaten twice. And then when they do go up against the best athletes a round later, they're just going to be carrying more fatigue and have even less chance than they had in the opening round. I understand why World Athletics are doing it, because it's been explained to me that it's about kind of fighting their corner with broadcast hours with the IOC and sort of having extra quantity. But my fear is ultimately it will just dilute the quality and not do the sport or ultimately the athletes much good at all.
I'm aware I'm speaking to yourself, Cathal, an expert in the field, and yourself, Katie, as well, and a former Commonwealth athlete as well. So two absolute experts here. But from the outside looking in, who have they consulted here, Cathal? Like, you explained kind of the rationale and the reasoning, and Katie's kind of touched on it as well. But like, if you're not a fan, like, are they consulting with athletes here? Or is it just being thrown in here without any forethought?
So the World Athletics Council, yeah, it's made up of basically various kind of sports political figures, but it does also have a male and female representative from the Athletes Commission, and they are pretty much the voices of the athletes, so they would consult with the athletes and tell them what's happening at that kind of board level. But yeah, I think that's one thing World Athletics have been criticised a lot for, is failing to probably consult sufficiently with the athletes before making decisions like this. But often when you do bring in changes, it doesn't prove popular with most athletes. So I suppose the exception to that would be the recent prize money they've brought in at the Olympics. But yeah, it is kind of, the rationale is to kind of increase the broadcast hours, and to basically that athletics will fight for more space and more oxygen at, I suppose, the biggest show on earth, because that ultimately determines who gets the eyes and who gets the money that comes in from all those broadcast deals.
Mm. How might this change tactics and the influence on the Olympics itself, Katie?
I mean, I think that personally, thinking about how I would prepare for this myself, there's not actually much that you can do in ways of preparation. So you maybe could try and include some races in your schedule where you're racing, you know, multiple days in a row, but that can be difficult to get. And I was just thinking about what the effect of our teams this weekend is going to be. You know, we saw Charlene Maudsley in the Worlds last year running 5-6 races, and I feel like there is a massive physiological impact on the athletes, and it's really important that that's considered by the management and that they're making sure that they're swapping people out. And of course, you know, countries such as the USA or, you know, the Netherlands, they have a massive roster of athletes and a lot of depth there. And Cathal, I was just wondering what your thoughts are on how that might change some of the team decisions that might be coming up tomorrow for Ireland.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see, because I think the two, I suppose, lethal weapons in the Irish armory are, of course, Rashida Adlecki and Charlene Maudsley. Both of those, as you understand, will be running both the heats tomorrow evening of the women's 4x4 and the mixed 4x4. But the issue is you can only sub in one athlete for the final. And that's doable at the heat stage because there's a 2-hour gap between them. And I think both athletes will be pretty used to that kind of turnaround. But if both teams make the final, there's only 30 minutes between the finals of the women's 4x4 and the mixed 4x4 on Sunday night. So those athletes won't probably be able to double back. I think Charlene Maudsley will, but in the mixed relay, you can only make one substitute. So I think what we'd expect to see is both Rashida and Charlene running the heats, and then basically Charlene perhaps doubling if they both make the final, or whichever qualifying second round, I suppose, repechage round, whatever you want to call it, that they go into.
Yeah, no, it seems like it's going to be a challenging weekend in terms of making those decisions. What are your thoughts on Team Ireland's prospects? We were sort of talking before you came on the line there. What do you think is going to be the likely outcome for Ireland at the weekend in the Bahamas?
I think it's as strong as a relays of Ireland has ever really sent, you know. I mean, and again, those two athletes, we keep coming back to Rashida and Charlene, they are world-class operators. And I mean, you could put those two against up almost any two from around the world. So it's obviously about the third and fourth athletes, how strong can they be? But I think we could be looking at national records in both the women's 4x4 and the mixed relay. 3:26 is the women's record back in Munich, and 3:12 is the mixed relay record from the Tokyo Olympic final. And I think we're looking at perhaps two top eight finishes. A lot will depend on the lane draws, which we won't know for till probably about 8 or 9pm tonight. Because obviously with only the top two to go through, that will be done on seeding. And in all likelihood, you might be looking at a USA or Jamaica or Britain or the Netherlands for that first spot. So it'll be crucial that Ireland beats the best of the rest into that second automatic spot into the final. And of course, thereby securing Olympic qualifications and not having to kind of run the risk a day later in those kind of in round two. But yeah, I think both teams are definitely capable of top eight finishes. And I think perhaps if they really fire, we could be looking at maybe a top six, with perhaps the top three just been out of reach at this stage.
I'm very much loving this positivity, because Katie, you mentioned to me before we came on air that this whole system now, the underdogs, it's nearly done away with now. There's no such thing. So perhaps Ireland, we don't have to be the underdogs anymore. We can be at the forefront.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to say was that my worry is that we're not going to see the people who are qualifying through those repechage rounds challenging in those finals. And that's what Cahill was saying there as well.
Yeah.
And the likes of Ireland, we have qualified for finals in that position a lot of times in the last couple of years. And it would be such a shame if that hinders their ability to kind of challenge on those top, you know, three, four positions that they're really aiming for. You know, the team seems very ambitious. I know that Charlene Maudsley was quoted saying that, you know, they're looking for medals. They want to try and, you know, make an impact and make sure that the world is looking at them and worried about them. But I just worry that those rounds might potentially reduce the ability for them to make that impact.
It's going to be a tough weekend for our athletes, I suppose, is a fine summation, Katie, is it?
Yeah, tough weekend, but hopefully a lot of fun as well. You know, the team environment looks great. It looks like they're all enjoying themselves. And, you know, who's not going to love running in the Bahamas?
Absolutely. Cahill, we were only giving out that we're not. Are you over there yourself? Are you getting the trip over there?
Sadly not.
No.
I've been to it twice before, and it's one of my favourite events. It's some laugh and it's some spot and there's some atmosphere. But yeah, sadly not this year. I'll be watching from afar, jealous of everyone else.
I can imagine. We do have a text in. Will it be on the television? It is streamed on the World Athletics YouTube page. I believe as well. Athletics Ireland and the RTE Sport website will have updates throughout the course of the weekend, as will Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport and RTE Radio 1. So you can watch it online. But for now, Cahill Denny, thank you very much. Katie Kirk from RTE Sport, thank you very much. We are taking another short break. Then we've hurling, we've football, and we've soccer to come. So stick with us here in Game On.
RTE 2FM. Live music on 2FM. Game On.
Hurling.
Now, I'm delighted to say that Shane McGrath joins us to chat hurling, because there are two crucial provincial hurling clashes this weekend. There are also three Joe McDonagh matches and indeed an under-20 match this evening in Semple Stadium. But Shane McGrath, let us begin our conversation with your own Tipperary, because they are in need of a big response against Waterford. Both Tip and Waterford named unchanged starting lineups from their latest outings for Saturday's Munster Senior Hurling Championship encounter at Walsh Park. Are you surprised to see that they've stuck with the same team, Shane?
Say there's probably more of a chance of Brian Cody being the next Tip senior hurling manager, to be honest, Shane. if they start as named, but especially after what Liam Cahill said the last day. I know he's a bit emotional and everything after the game, and he was interviewed in the Gaelic Grounds, and he said there'll have to be consequences. So, you know, based on that, and you know, even the likes of, say, Cahill Barrett now is back on the bench. Conor Stakelham is in there as well. So I'd say, like, you know, it'd be no surprise for anyone to see that there will. Very hard to see Tip starting as they are. I think Waterford will start as they are, because they played well against Cork. You know, they got their home win down there, you know, in their first game. You know, they had an abysmal record, really, in the Munster round robin. But look, they're one from one now in 2024, and like, they don't fear Tip at all when it comes to Munster Championship, Shane. Like, Tip are trying to win this fixture for the first time in 5 years. Waterford are going for 3 in a row in Munster Championship wins over Tip. So, like, they'll be delighted that Tip are coming to town. And look, it's just kind of, look, it's been well spoken about here all week. There was a lot of frustration at the start of the week, you know, disappointment maybe with how the match against Limerick went for Tip. But look, we are where we are now. And I just think, you know, Tip people, and I'm sure the group themselves, they're just, I think they're delighted with the quick turnaround rather than thinking about it for a few weeks. And just, as I said during the week, like a bit of redemption for themselves, like, really, as a group too. Because, look, we've all been part of teams where we've lost games or even got hammerings, but I think it was just the manner of it. There didn't seem to be that bite, that intensity, that, you know, willing to throw the body on the line kind of stuff. And look, hopefully we'll see that and more now from the Tip boys tomorrow night in Waterford. Because if we don't, Shane, mathematically Tip still have a chance, but realistically, like, in psychologically everything, if Tip don't win tomorrow night, I think their championship year could be done. Like,
I know most players say you want to get straight back out there when you take a big defeat, but the manner of that defeat, like, how do you turn around that in such a short period of time?
Like, I think as a player like yourself, like, that you never really wanted to get back out at it as quickly as when you have a poor performance or you feel you haven't done yourself proud, or, you know, gone to the potential that you have yourself. I know myself as a player that you just wanted to get back out there straight away. And like, the 6 day turnaround, I think, is great for that, for the Tip lads, that their little or no training will have been done in the last few days. You know, it's just a matter of, I don't think there's really much need for motivation. There shouldn't be, like, that. You just, lads, this is it. Like, you know, this is a chance for ye to redeem yourselves. You know, to show that ye are a better team. Like, are we in the top 3, 4, 5 in the country at the moment? We're probably not, like, in terms of where other teams are at, but we're definitely not 15 points worse than Limerick. So I just think that's what people want to see now in Walsh Park, that just a real honest performance from the group. Throw the shackles off, go with it. Maybe get a couple of more experienced guys on the pitch and bring in the younger guys to finish it off. So I'm talking about maybe, like, Noel McGrath. I'd love to see Noel McGrath starting. I just think the calmness and the experience he brings to the thing brings lads in around him. And, you know, if he can't go for the full 70, well, then you empty your bench. You get younger lads on and try and finish the job. Hopefully a job that can be finished at that stage from a Tip point of view. But as I said, Davey will be absolutely delighted. I'm very interested to see, Shane, how Waterford set up tactically. Will they go man on man, kind of like they did against Cork, and they had Desi Hutchison inside and they were hitting the space in front of him, and, you know, there's that interchange in the forwards? Or will they say, right, what's worked before against Tip? Go back to last year in Simple Stadium, running game. Be interested to see, are they going to actually, you know, maybe change tack a bit from where the way they play against Cork, and are they going to run at Tip? So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things to unfold, I think. And also, just a quick one, Shane, I suppose it's interesting that one of Waterford's all-time greats is Tony Brown. He's involved with Tip, and maybe, in my opinion, Tip's greatest player ever, Owen Kelly, is involved with Waterford. So it's interesting there, both camps there, I'd say, this week. Like,
I do enjoy those narratives. I do want to pick your brain on Wexford Galway, and we're tight for time. So, in a word, Tip Waterford, who's going to win?
If Tip perform, I'm going to go with Tip.
Okay. Unsurprisingly, you're going with Tip, however. Wexford manager Keith Rossiter has remained loyal to the team. Antrim defeated by 2 points last Sunday. Fullback Liam Ryan is back in the panel but has not been named as a starter. Unsurprisingly, Evan Nyland has been included in the Galway team on the back of a 7-point haul from the bench in the draw against Kilkenny last Sunday. Nyland is one of 3 changes for the Tribesmen, with Jack Grealish and Gerard McInerney also handed a starting berth. Darren Morrissey misses out through injury, with John Lennon and David Burke dropping to the bench. Speaking of responses, Wexford will obviously want to park the Antrim loss and indeed that late collapse to Dublin and put it up to Galway. And Galway themselves, they won't be too happy with the draw last weekend to Kilkenny. So both teams out here with a point to prove.
Yeah, both Jekyll and Hyde performances there from him. Like, you just don't know what Wexford is coming. It's either a Wexford that can go and beat Kilkenny and Nolan Park, or it's a Wexford that loses to Antrim. And it has to be the Wexford that goes and beats Kilkenny and Nolan Park that has to come and try and win this match tomorrow. Because, like, to be honest, Shane, they've only 1 point. If they don't win tomorrow, they'll have 1 point in their last 2 games against Carlow and Kilkenny. We don't know what's going to happen when they play Kilkenny. And we all know that Carlow, we've seen the improvements they're doing, 4 or 5 points up at half-time against Dublin last week. So, you know, this is a must-win for both of them. I think Galway as well, like, conceding 23 points from play against Kilkenny, and Kilkenny without Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody, two of their best forwards. They're one of the greatest goalies ever, Owen Murphy, for restarts alone, not playing either Mikey Carey, these kind of guys. So I think it's like for both of them, it's kind of a redemption thing too, using that word again, like the tip lads, but they'll have to perform, both of them, and they're both similar in that you just don't know which one is going to show up. So I just think Galway on paper are unbelievable. Like their inside forward line alone, like Conor Whelan, Conor Cooney, Kyle Mannion, that's as good as there is in the country. So again, like tip, I think if Galway, if they perform, like obviously the Wexford crowd will get behind them down to Wexford Park, but leave Galway, they just have to get a performance now. It just has to come. They've had enough lads coming in and out being managers and selectors and coaches and S&C coaches. They just need to perform now as a group because the potential is there. And I think if they do, Wexford are very dependent on Lee Chin. Like, I'll give you a quick stat there, Shane, right? 323 he scored in two matches. That's 64% of what Wexford have scored in the championship so far. Lee Chin has scored in his own. I think if you just throw that out alone to say the rest of them, like Conor McDonald, Rory O'Connor, these guys who are class hurlers, they just need to take a bit of a burden off him. So I think they're very reliant on Lee Chin so far. So that can't happen tomorrow or they just won't get the win. Like.
Okay. Quick fire now because we're going to have to round up. So in a word, Wexford or Galway?
Galway.
Galway. So you're going tip Galway and then John McDonagh. Down or Westmead?
I'm going to go Westmead. Last two need a win.
And Meath Offaly?
Meath Offaly. Meath are getting absolutely wiped off the floor by everyone at the moment. So that's going to be an Offaly no-brainer there.
Offaly no-brainer. And then Kerry Leash,
both unbeaten so far. Kerry at home, but I think Leash are starting to find a bit of form now, coming good. Going to go with Leash.
Okay, great stuff, Shane McGrath. Listen, enjoy the under-20 match if you do make it down. Tip Cork and Sebel Stadium this evening. Thanks so much for taking the call. We are sticking with Gaelic games and we're motoring nicely. Brendan Devaney is on the line. However, Alan Cawley is going to interject here with an update from Punchestown.
Just a quick one, another one for Townend on the board.
Another one for Townend on the board. So the Jockeys Championship is heating up. Alan Cawley, thank you very much. He's sticking around to chat soccer very shortly. However, provincial finals this weekend. Brendan Devaney, let us begin with Galway Mayo. Pearse Stadium, 4 p.m. on Sunday. One of the greatest rivalries in Gaelic football. Always a great occasion. How close is this one going to be?
Yeah, Shane, listen, you would hope, maybe more from a Galway perspective, that it is close because it's looking like Mayo are primed to win this game. 48 titles each are sitting on the two kings of Connacht, so something has to give. Certainly Galway, of course, going for three in a row, but just on the season that they've had, Mayo very comfortable in the league. Obviously, a good victory last time out against the Rossies, and then you've seen, obviously, Galway very easily could have been beaten against Sligo. So certainly it's Mayo look the steadier team, the more, I suppose, together outfit. And listen, Comer come back the last, they had a couple of points. Is massive for them. Walsh, of course, was taken off in that game. So all it doesn't seem that right in the Galway camp going into this. This is 5 years of Joyce. And, of course, seeing a terrible record against Mayo. 8 games in league and championship. They've only won one, drawn one and lost six.
Mayo manager Kevin McStay has named an unchanged team from the semi-final win over Roscommon. Galway make two changes for the deciders. Damien Comer plays, but John Marr also comes into the starting 15. Fellow forwards Liam O'Connell and Jack McCabe drop to the bench. So would I be right in saying you're leaning towards Mayo, Brendan?
Yeah, as I say, there's just been so much about Galway this year. Now, of course, listen, seeing injuries, you got to say, obviously, it was amazing for Galway to stay in the division. But you think then coming into the championship, but they caught a bit of fire. You know, it's only 2022, they're all out of finals, so close to a potential win. And just obviously a lot of that was built on a few key men. And you just wondered then, as I say, particularly, I mean, Walsh had the game of his life that day. You just wonder from him the fact that he was taken off. And listen, Ryan O'Donoghue and Johnny McGrath, I think, of a great battle. I think Walsh will be picked up by Kellen and McBrien pick up Comer. All key battles, Aidan O'Shea, Fitzgerald, I would say. Conroy's the other interesting fella, you know, obviously plagued by injuries for Mayo. Had a couple of points the last day. If he catches fire, it could be big for them because I think there's too much on O'Donoghue. That said, O'Donoghue can play everywhere. I think, along with him being a brilliant finisher, he's a very intelligent footballer. He can play full forward, come out around centre half forward as well. Paddy Durkin limped off in that semi-final. It looks like he is maybe going to make this game. That's the word from Mayo.
Hopefully it is a cracker, 4 p.m. A little bit earlier on Sunday, 1:45 in Ennis, Clare Kerry, strong 15 named for Kerry. Jason Foley returns to the starting side after recovering from injury, and Shane Murphy starts in goal. Brian O'Bioglock fit again. Clare will be looking to maintain the fine form which took them into their second consecutive Munster final. Daniel Walsh has recovered from injury and comes in for Mark McInerney in what is the only change from their semi-final win over Waterford. Is the best we can hope for here is a closer contest than last year, but ultimately nailed on for a Kerry win, Brendan?
Yeah, well, do you know what, Shane? See, last year there's 10 players gone from Clare, 10 players. I mean, it's phenomenal that Clare even had the season that they had. I mean, people thought they might end up in Division 4. They were right in at the last game with possible promotion from 3. So, listen, fair play to Fitzgerald for doing it. You know, some players like Clary, Sexton, O'Connell, you know, Russell, top-class footballers, some of the best Clare have ever had. So how they've managed to stabilise, that's very interesting. And I suppose Fitzgerald doing the toss, you know, whether it was in Killarney or neutral venue, I think it was an irrelevant type of game. You know, the fact that he tossed for it and it's at Cusey Park now, first final there since 1919 or something like that. But I think there's about 10,000 expected there. So listen, Clare fans, come in, get behind him. He said Clifford last year hitting 2-6, and really you just wonder with that forward power of Kerry, how can there be an opportunity? And hit 5 goals last year, which was the winning of the game. Can Clare stay in the game? See, that's all we're looking for. We're looking for that it's not an over contest before even half time. And I was just thinking to myself, what if Clare had decided, you know, the Talton Cup's a place for us, and through the game against Waterford, you'd have Waterford in the Munster final and got into the group stage as well, which would have been quite a scenario.
Oh, absolutely. Well, here's hoping for two closely contested provincial finals, and no doubt there'll be two raucous atmospheres. Brendan Devaney, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Football.
Now we move on to football. Alan Colley is still with us. Fergal Brennan is joining us. A couple of news headlines. Liam Scales has signed a new 4-year contract following his breakthrough season with Celtic. Republic of Ireland international has made 40 appearances following his return from a loan spell with Aberdeen. So good news for Liam Scales. And former Ireland international Richard Keogh has today announced his retirement from football. So we wish Richard Keogh all the best. We will be previewing League of Ireland, but first Premier League. Let us hear from a very emotional Jurgen Klopp in his pre-match press conference today.
Congratulations on securing Champions League football for next season.
Thank you, I take that. I felt exactly the same last night. I was really happy.
After last season, we speak today, 3 games before the end of the season, about qualifying for the Champions League, which is an achievement. Does it feel to everybody like that? Maybe not. To me, it does. And that's how the perspective can change during the season, because for a while we had maybe obviously looked like we can go all the way, or at least stay in the race for longer, which was definitely possible. For different reasons that didn't work out. It's not over yet. It is not over yet, I know that, but it's it looks like. So we should just, the pressure is off now. It's now, that's done. We should really,
it would be really cool if we could play our absolute, really, really good football again. That would be absolutely nice, because obviously we were very tense in the last weeks. We had a super intensive period as well. So this Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday didn't work out for us now too well after a long, 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 long season. But how is that? Going back to the start of the season, and everybody knew how important it would be to qualify for the Champions League again. And that's super important for the future of the club, and I'm really happy about that.
Jürgen, just mentioning the intensity that you've had in the to have it 8 days now at this stage, how much has that helped with this week?
Massively. First of all, the boys had a couple of days off, which is super important. We could have proper training sessions again, which we are pretty much not used to anymore. Wow, it's really, you have to plan training sessions and all these kind of things. Usually we stumble from one minus one into the next, and then we play again. I think I said it from the first day, training helps good coaches, good managers and good footballers massively. I hope we can see that, but we will see that. In general, I think it's a really interesting subject on the way out. I could not be less interested what to really make of it, to be honest, but seeing that Aston Villa lost last night 4-2, for example, would mean that if they'd really go out, that no English team is in any kind of European final. You all will stay here, you all will talk about it, if you don't decrease the intensity for the players. Because if you make of the fact that English teams are not in a final, if you make of that we all underperformed, I'm not sure that that might be in moments, definitely us against Atalanta, stuff like this. But in general, footballers in England, Premier League, I watch a lot of football all over the world. England, Premier League is the best league in the world. So it's not overrated. The players are overworked. Easy as that. I mean, you can talk about that until everybody realizes and finally, and another. But somebody obviously needs to help the people. So you cut off one game, you get
well, the top teams, I'm not sure exactly how many more Champions League games we have next. They have next three more Champions League games, and you can't opt for that League Cup semi-final, the second. And the discussion you all allow is like, what is that? Oh, you cut off one game. And now everybody has a reason to ask one. To say, oh, we cannot cut off these games. It's important for everything. You then sort that situation, but you cannot sort it all the time. I had a discussion only the other day with the colleagues, my favorite TV channel, which I definitely will never watch again, TNT, and said, it's always a conversation I have, is always saying that, yeah, but they pay you. They pay they give money to football. It's not like that. I really don't want to see it like that. It's exactly the other way around. Football pays them. Because they broadcast it, they deliver it, but it's not that TNT is not doing extremely well, or Sky, or whoever is doing extremely well. They can pay all of you and stuff like this, so they have all, it's all fine. You have to become a partner of footballers, of football again, and not just the squeezer. That's it. That's a little advice from an old man on the way out. And I will watch a lot of football, but not all, because people can survive without match days from time to time, definitely. And this is horrible. That City and Arsenal, that they're out in the quarterfinals, is just not a reflection. That we are out in the quarterfinals is just not a real reflection of quality. It's just a reflection of we couldn't deliver on the day we had to. Yes, and other countries have really good teams, no doubt about that. But it's a sign. And years ago, I think we had four English teams in quarterfinals and stuff like that. And then we take that and say, it's the quality of the Premier League, and let's make more of it. But you have to change that approach. That's how it is. And you cannot only look. You always think when I speak about it, it's because our last situation, we lost we didn't lose against West Ham, but because of the last game. No, it's a general problem. Nothing to do with our schedule now. Our schedule is right, it's good. Can we use that? I don't know. We will see. But that they dare to give Thursday, Sunday, which is not to change because we're still in Europe, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, 12:30 is a crime. I was actually waiting for Amnesty International to go to them. And I saw somebody sits there. You love this press conference. So just somebody sits there and decides that I would like to meet, would like to be once part of that meeting when somebody says, Liverpool 12:30, and the whole room is bursting into laugh. Again? I would like to be there. This morning, again, I got sent the stats for the quickest turnaround in the whole world. Liverpool FC. And we sit there, and I'm the same, and I tell you, you have to do more, and you have to fight more, and you have to go for it. In the whole world, we have the quickest turnaround between games. That's absolutely insane. So, but they are still happy and collect subscribers. You can take me off that list. If you ever go looking for a pundit, I speak English, I could do it, but...
Speaking of that last quote, now, the TNT... Twitter profile. Now, this is borderline banter, so not for me personally, but however, they did put up a Photoshop of Jurgen Klopp and job requirements. Champions League winner, tick. Premier League winner, tick. Multilingual, tick. But the box is left unticked for willing to work 12:30 on Saturday. So, Fergal Brennan, you were there present at the press conference. Jurgen Klopp in good form. What did you make of it all?
Sometimes at these press conferences, you can kind of get a feeling that something is coming. It happens kind of maybe once a season. You know, when you put your phone down or your recording device down on the front table, you just get a sense that it's going to be one of those days that there's a list that Jurgen Klopp wants to get off his chest, and that was certainly the case today. I think a lot of what he spoke about will resonate with a lot of Premier League fans. Obviously, sometimes when it's looked at from a partisan point of view, there's obviously rival fans that will say, oh, just get on with it. You need to do this and you need to do this. I think the big takeaway from me in terms of what he says is this idea of turnarounds, because when you talk of game loads, there are equivalents across Europe, across the major leagues. You look at Real Madrid, La Liga is a 38-game season as well. They have the Copa del Rey, which effectively mirrors the amount of games that the FA Cup does. They don't have a League Cup, but they do have the Spanish Super Cup. So there's give or take two or three games either side. It's this idea of turnarounds, and it's the demands being placed by television companies with regards to kickoff times and with regards to scheduling. That's his main issue. And I think that's what we all need to be thinking about. It's very, very quick, particularly for non-Liverpool fans, to just say, Klopp making these points again, etc. He should do this or he shouldn't do this. But there is a situation whereby teams are being squeezed. Every drop is being squeezed in terms of the amount of recovery, rest, planning, all the logistics that surround organising a Premier League football match. The margins are being tightened and tightened and tightened every single season. And that's what his main point is. It's not about a situation of just Liverpool. It's a situation of a wider issue that ultimately teams, clubs, supporters will suffer, because there has to come a crunch point where a change is brought in, because that is not the situation in the Premier League. And I think one of the best examples, just to go back to La Liga for 1 second, Real Madrid's Champions League game against Bayern Munich, and in the previous round against Manchester City, they liaised with La Liga to move their league games around to give them an extra day's rest. That type of dispensation just doesn't exist in the Premier League. And Klopp's point is, not only does it not exist, teams that want that extra rest period sometimes are almost punished for asking for it.
Well, it is a valid point, to be fair. On the field, Alan Colley, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Manchester City, Wolves, Saturday at 12:30 and Saturday at 5:30 respectively. Are we going to see some more twists and turns, more drama in this Premier League title race?
Is Klopp still going?
This could be just a big plan of taking all the attention away from the players and Liverpool.
I thought
just
he was
to,
never going to shut up there, but I'm with Fergal. I actually think he made some valid points on that. We'll come back to that maybe when we have more time, Shane. But I think it'll be, if it's going to happen, I think it could happen this weekend against Wolves. I think Wolves, Gary O'Neill has done a brilliant job, and they're in a position now where obviously they've nothing to play for. It's a shot to nothing. He obviously thinks very deeply about the game. We saw him that night on Monday Night Football, tactically how astute he is, Gary O'Neill. So I think he will relish the opportunity to go up against Pep Guardiola and potentially cause a bit of a stir. I think Arsenal will get the job done in the morning, and there's something in that as well, Shane, in the fact that they're obviously playing ahead of Man City. I think psychologically that's a big thing as well, that they can get their business done and heap a little bit more pressure on Man City because they're not playing till 5:30. So I think if we're going to see a twist, it could be this weekend.
Okay, final word in the Premier League to you, Fergal. Just on the opposite end of the table, big relegation games all over. Luton, Everton tonight, Burnley, Newcastle, Sheffield United, Forest. And there's an Irish interest in these matches as well. So a lot of Irish focus on the relegation scrap.
Certainly. And in terms of the teams that could go down or will go down, interestingly, someone who I don't think will be involved for Luton tonight, Chidozie Ogbeni, he's... If I was to look at this from a selfish point of view in terms of which Irish player I think it is most important to be playing in the Premier League from those teams involved in the relegation battle, it's him for me. And that's no disrespect to Burnley or Nottingham Forest or Sheffield United, have already gone down. I just think he's proven himself this year to be a Premier League player. I was so pleased that he got a Premier League move at the start of the campaign. I think he's demonstrated that he's a real threat. Obviously, he's had an injury the last couple of weeks and that's kept him out. He should be back before the end of the season. But Luton needs to get something tonight against Everton, who are already safe themselves. I think they will. Forest all along have been my tip to go down. And there's obviously an enormous amount of controversy swirling around them at the moment. I think if Luton gets something tonight, they'll put themselves in a really strong position, because Forest, there's so much distraction off the pitch at the moment that they're struggling to get results on it, and Luton look like a much tighter and more consistent unit.
Great stuff, Fergal Brennan. Thank you very much for joining us. Alan, you're sticking with us. Big night in the League of Ireland. You're off to Dalymount Park for a Dublin derby, the biggest derby game to some. Rolls around again tonight with the beginning of another double weekend of games that will quickly impact the table. Lots of injury problems for Shamrock Rovers, whoever they are, in a 5-game unbeaten run coming up against the Jekyll and Hyde Bohemians that are trying to find their feet with Alan Reynolds.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's been a good start for Alan Reynolds since he's gone in at Bohemians. But as you say, it's a work in progress, and that's the reason obviously why he was appointed, because things weren't working out for the previous manager, and he's under no illusions just about the job in hand in terms of how difficult it's going to be. But as I say, it's been a good start for them. But these are the games, Shane. The Dublin derby never disappoints. It's absolutely fantastic fixture. I think I've been to every Shamrock Rovers Bohemians game for the past 4 or 5 years, home and away, and as I said, it never disappoints. It's a brilliant atmosphere, brilliant night. I'm really looking forward to this evening's one. And as you say, Shamrock Rovers are in decent form as well themselves, despite the fact that they have a lot of injuries. Now, people will argue, oh, well, if anyone can cater for having injuries, it's them and the squad that they have. Mm. But they do have a lot of injuries, to be fair to them, of big key players as well. But to be fair to Stephen Bradley, even speaking about it last week, he says, look, that's no excuse. We have a team capable of still going out beating most teams in this league, despite the injuries. So it'll be a big night in Daly Mount. Looking forward to it. I think Bowes could cause a little bit of a surprise, Shane.
Oh, okay.
Just at home. I just think home advantage, all those injuries.
Yeah.
As I said, I think Shamrock Rovers have been good in recent weeks, but just the fact that it's at home and it's been a few iffy results in terms of the league. It's hard to call. They're really hard to predict.
Would be like,
lads are ringing me on a Friday morning thinking, who do you fancy tonight? And I think I've got it wrong every week. So.
Well, that's the beauty of it, that it is. That anyone can be anyone. Can Galway frustrate Derry?
I think they can because of the form they've showed as well, particularly in the big games. I think it's important that Derry got back on the horse, which they have done in the last couple of results after the defeat to Shamrock Rovers, because it was we were up in the Brandywell that night and there was a lot of doom and gloom around the place, but they've bounced back well from that. I think, as we always say, Shane, about Derry City and the challengers, that if they've aspirations to win a league, which they do, you have to be going to places like Galway and picking up 3 points. Mm.
John Daly needs a result at home to Drogheda.
A big one, yeah. John Daly is under pressure, I think. And to be fair to Drogheda, they've been very, very good this season themselves. I know they got heavily beaten on Monday night, but the double weekends, if you like, when they go Friday, Monday, always catches them out. So it's a tough ask again for Drogheda, but I think they've been good. It's a big night for John Daly and he does need a result.
Mm. Will your beloved Sligo get over the line against Waterford briefly?
Really hard to call, and I think after a really positive start with Sligo Rovers, the wheels have come off a little bit. A few injuries, but the form would be worrying for me.
And in a word, the Noel King Derby in Oriel Park, Dundalk Shells, who's going to come out on top?
Shelburne.
Good man, Alan.
I'll always keep you happy. You're Alan, my friend.
Alan Colley, thank you very much. Katie Kirk, thank you very much. Thank you to all our contributors. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Max Falvey for working on this evening's show.